the number of positive cases in Indiana have been going up in the past couple of weeks. It seems like it's a sharp spike, because there have been some days where it's gone up as high as over 900 in one day. What does this mean as far as what you guys are doing with the data? What is your analysis of this?
Yeah, so our analysis is that definitely the prevalence of the disease is increasing in the state, and specifically in many parts of the state. So we look not only at the state as a whole, but also regionally and then by county. And so there's multiple pockets of disease spread happening in Indiana all at one time, which drives up the overall state numbers.
So I know that in one county in particular, let's take a look at, DuBois County. At first, when this whole thing started, they had maybe 7 or 8 cases to begin with. And now, their cases, or they're one of the hot spots, or as some people would say, hot spots. Vandenberg County, that area of the state, and Marion County, too. And, some of the listeners are saying, why are we having to be punished because of, and they can maybe consider some of these restrictions punishment, why are we having to be restricted or punished because some of these counties are hot spots?
Well, the reason why we need sort of broad population level action is to stop the spread of the disease. So it's true that some people may not have been following the guidelines, and they're, I'm sure no one's wittingly spreading the disease, but there are many people who don't even know they're sick, but they're carrying the disease and they're spreading it to other people when they come into close contact with them. So yes, because of some people, it's not just a handful of people in one spot. It's multiple people in several spots around the state. And so because we're seeing this disease spread continue to climb and climb, public health needed to take action. And that means kind of slowing things down, taking a step back to protect the lives of everyone in the state. So it's not so much a punishment as it is maybe an inconvenience for a short period of time so that we can get the spread of the disease under control.
Looking at the numbers and looking at maybe data from places where this has happened before, maybe not in Indiana, does this really work? Does this really slow the spread down?
Yes, these actions definitely have a major impact on the spread of the disease. It can take about 2 to 3 weeks for the actions to take effect, but we have seen in other countries, particularly South Korea, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, that these actions can have a major impact on slowing the spread of the disease. We've also seen it in other states. In fact, we saw it in our own state when we took dramatic action back at the end of March and into April. We slowed the spread of the disease. And then, we saw the numbers come down and down and down throughout May and into the first part of June. And that was due to the actions that we took back in March and April. I think the challenge is that as we have, progressively reopened the state and relaxed some of our restrictions, that the disease spread began to pick up again, particularly as people began to come out, socialize again. Some people chose to, leave the state, maybe go to other states where the virus was more rampant, and then they came back. We've seen kind of a combination of those two things happen.
Yeah, I think maybe some people would ask the question, because we weren't under a mask mandate back in March and April, how is that going to make a difference now?
Well, what it's going to do is the mask mandate is going to slow down the spread of the disease, so we can sort of bend the curve once again and slow things down and keep it low. So the idea behind these measures is that we can aggressively kind of isolate the disease, the people who have it now, identify their contacts, get those people into quarantine. Then if at the population level, everyone's wearing a mask, it's going to slow the spread amongst especially those people who don't know they have the virus right now, and maybe they're not feeling any symptoms at all, but they have the ability to transmit it to somebody else. The mask, them wearing the mask, stops the spread of the disease to other people when they come into contact with them at the grocery store or at work or in a social setting.
A couple of other questions. I want to talk about the relationship between the number of COVID cases right now and the number of deaths. Is it is it true that, you know, doing some analysis, that the number of deaths is down relative to the number of cases that we have compared to when this first started?
Yes, that is absolutely true. We have seen mortality rates, or the number of people who die from COVID-19, steadily fall from back from the height in, back in April. And so we are still seeing very low numbers of people who die from COVID, even though our case rates are going up. And a lot of this is explained based on the demographics of who is getting sick. So today in July, we have only a handful of outbreaks happening inside of nursing homes. Back in April, we had a lot of outbreaks happening in nursing homes, and older individuals are at a higher risk of death. So the people that we see testing positive today, over 50% of them are under 30 years of age. So they're at much lower risk of death from COVID-19. Some of them will get sick and go into the hospital, but most of those people will recover from COVID-19. That's the reason why we see the rates continue to go up, even though deaths are relatively low. The other thing about deaths is that there's a lag in when they get reported. You know, someone may get infected from COVID-19, takes 2 to 5 days for them to start showing any symptoms, if they're going to show any symptoms. And then it might take another few days before they get sick enough where they might have to be hospitalized or cause death. And so it may take another, you know, week or two before we start seeing any kind of rise in deaths from this latest wave of new cases.
And another complaint that we get here in the newsroom from people calling in is that we don't talk enough about recovery numbers. But you guys all along have been at least providing some data on people who have been released from the hospital. Why are there no exact numbers on recovery? And what do the numbers about people who have been released from the hospital, what does that go to say about the pandemic in Indiana?
Yes. So with respect to release from the hospital, most of the people who go into the hospital do actually sort of recover from this. Over time, physicians and hospitals have learned how to better manage patients and treat them when they're in the hospital. So today, going into the hospital with COVID, you're likely to come out of it, even if you have to stay in there for a couple of weeks. We have a really good healthcare system that can take care of you. The individuals that are, as I said, are at higher risk of death are those that are older. So, but the vast majority of people who get the disease and go into the hospital, they do get discharged and they recover. The hard part about the overall recovery metric is that we don't have a lot of good information on the people who don't show signs and symptoms and don't interact with the healthcare system. So the easiest group of people for us to measure when it comes to, you know, negative outcomes from COVID are the people who show up in the emergency department or who end up getting hospitalized from the disease, because their data is readily available in the healthcare system and we can measure that. Individuals who get the virus and recover from it at home and never come in for either a test or any other kind of clinical visit for the disease, it's very hard to measure whether they've quote unquote recovered. So a lot of our assumptions about recovery are saying, well, if someone has a test, if someone has a test and then they don't interact with the healthcare system for a couple of weeks, then they likely recovered from it at home. And that's a part of the challenge in calculating those statistics. But we make the best sort of guesses we can about individuals who have no symptoms or mild symptoms about when they, quote unquote, recover.
What is the Regan Streef relationship to the state? Is it merely providing data or is it providing advice? How do you guys what is that relationship? What's the nature of it?
Yeah, so the Regan Streef Institute is a nonprofit research organization. So we, in the role of COVID, we're actually doing multiple things with the state. One, we're a data partner for them. So we are providing them with data that we receive from the healthcare systems that we work with. We also receive data from the state so that we can work together to make sure that we're tracking not only people who are getting tested, but also people who are hospitalized hospitalized and have negative outcomes or recover from COVID-19. In addition to that, we are providing advice and guidance to the state health department as well as county health departments when requested, and the hospitals and health systems to help them plan for either originally the first wave of activity that happened, and now for this kind of resurgence of the disease, helping them understand the numbers and interpret them, running different charts and graphs to look at the shift in demographics and the hot spots around the state. So not only are we sort of providing data in spades to them, but we're also kind of working with them to interpret that, as we have, you know, physicians and epidemiologists and other experts at the Institute who are happy to provide that assistance.
Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to people about, you know, what you guys do and this latest resurgence here in the state. Thank you so much.
You are most welcome, Chris.